Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. I am currently at the Four Seasons residence here in KLCC, having a meeting or an audience with His Excellency Virginius Sinkevicius, the EU Commissioner for Environment. He's visiting Kuala Lumpur on the 1st and 2nd of September. During his visit here in the capital city, he has a few audiences that would touch on the issue of environment, including that with the Duli Mahamulia Sultan Nazrin Shah of Perak, as well as two ministers, Yang Berhormat Datuk Zuraida Kamarudin, the Minister of Plantation Industries and Commodities, as well as with Datuk Sri Mustafa Muhammad, formerly known as Tok Pah, Minister at the Prime Minister's Department in charge of economic affairs. Much of the conversation that I'm going to be having with him today will revolve around not just in the environment, but the policies surrounding it and governmental actions that would result from these policies, the challenges that lie within, as well as some of the items revolving around COP15. For those who want to be clued in, COP15 is of course the 15th meeting of the Conference of the Parties to the United Nations Convention on Biological Diversity. It is the biggest biodiversity conference to be seen in a while, I guess in a decade. And we're here to unpack many of the items revolving the issues of COP15, deforestation, as well as the environment. Here's my conversation with His Excellency Virginius Sinkevicius, the EU Commissioner for Environment. Commissioner, talk to us about the idea of COP15, some of the elements that surround it, and perhaps some of the actionable items that has resulted from all these meetings. Many of us are trying to understand a little bit better in terms of how things that were discussed were changed into actionable items.
Very good question. So probably to begin with, to understand what COP15 main aim is to protect biodiversity. And again, that can sound quite distant from people and mysterious, but actually this is the environment which is around us everywhere, even on the street when you leave your house. Mm. So, of course, the main aim is to protect, to reach an agreement to protect 30% of the world waters and land territories. That would allow and give sort of space for nature to thrive, and would ensure that nature is capable of continuing doing its ecosystem services. Mm. Services which we humans don't value because it's free. Mm-hmm. And we probably usually wake up and care about it when it's gone. Mm. So of course we don't want to let it happen until it's too late and irreversible things happen. We want our oceans to continue to successfully absorb CO2 and of course clean our water. We want our glaciers not to melt, but actually to harmonize temperature for us. We want our pollinators to pollinate our fields and ensure that we have actually delicious food on our table. Mm-hmm. We want fish in the waters, which again provides us with nutrition. So these all very simple things that are very close to us, and it's important to ensure that nature have its space and can continue providing these services. So to do so, we not only need to agree on targets, because every time we meet, we agree on a very ambitious target, we shake each other's hands, we are happy about it, but then we meet in 10 years and say, what happened? Why we didn't reach those targets? It's not because we were too ambitious, because I think at the end of the day, we agreed only on targets, but not on mechanisms, on how we're going to reach those targets, on financial mechanisms, how we're going to fund that those targets would be met. We have to also agree on which parts of the world we really want to protect, the old growth forests, those that untouched, where less and less of those remain. So there is a huge task, immense task to agree on, and of course we need everyone on board. That has to be a planet coalition. Mm-hmm. Because pollution, climate change, or biodiversity loss, they respect no borders. And it's, you know, us in European Union, accepting one or the other legislation, or here, your government in Malaysia on its own, we won't be successful in this fight. We need to unite our powers. So one of the topics why I'm here is, of course, also to synchronize our position ahead of COP15, discuss what are the main issues, how we can address, share best practices of nature restoration, of nature protection, which can be implemented here in Malaysia, around Malaysia, or in the European Union.
The other idea that I want to focus on is, of course, some of the issues surrounding deforestation. In Malaysia, we've seen how satellite images have depicted massive deforestation in this country. And of course, this is not a singular item afflicting Malaysia. Many others around the region are also facing the same issues. Perhaps you can share with us some of your thoughts regarding this particular matter.
So first of all, we talked a lot, of course, on deforestation legislation, which European Commission landed around a year ago. Our aim is very simple, is first of all to take responsibility for our consumption patterns. Because it's very strange when I come to foreign country and try to talk about deforestation while back home the consumption patterns that are growing are consuming those forests. So of course, first of all, we have to take a step and ensure that our consumption is not driving deforestation. But clearly, that you know, six commodities that are responsible for 90% of deforestation globally: soy, palm oil, wood, cattle, cacao, and coffee. They are coming from the developing countries. So, extremely important to ensure that this legislation is not discriminatory against any country, that it will be applicable to all the regions, all of those six commodities, from small to a large holder, and we will be able to, of course, help in order to ensure a traceability of where those commodities are harvested from, so that deforestation wouldn't be driven by our consumption. So I think, you know, that was a very good, a very frank conversation where I received questions, which I think I was able to answer. We agreed that we will further cooperate, and most importantly, when legislation will be finalized in our internal procedure, we will have a transition period. Times are changing, and first of all, society is changing. Society is much more demanding to policymakers as regards the climate or environmental matters than it used to be. Second thing, you see businesses also, you know, sustainability plays bigger and bigger role. So for one, you can say that, of course, they're using it as their marketing trick, and we have to ensure that this is not, you know, manipulated. But on the other hand, actually, this is what consumers demand. Also from businesses, their sustainability would be clear and clean sustainability record. So I think this inevitably moving towards that direction, and that's going to be only increasing. So I think what's very important, of course, to learn from those past lessons, why certain goals were not reached. We were not far from some countries were not far from, for example, reaching their Aichi targets. But again, I think, you know, if we would enshrine from the very beginning a monitoring mechanism, we could have been much more successful when we would have to return every 2 years and see for which reasons we are not able to reach one or the other goal and how we can all actually collectively help each other to reach those goals. That would be much more helpful rather than, you know, look at the goals every 10 years and then recognize that you're not able to reach them. And the last thing, which is extremely important, is societal pressure. So it's only going to be increasing. So you will have to really ensure that what you have promised, you deliver, because society will be demanding more and more from you.
I'd like to also understand a little bit better about how the EU is planning to help developing countries to help maintain a rather sustainable notion of biodiversity.
So we already started some of the projects, and EU is part of the projects here in Malaysia. I think one of the good projects is in Sabah region, where actually EU funded a nature protection, and what's most important, that it is done together with the local community, empowering local community. Because, to be honest, especially when we speak, and usually those most beautiful biodiverse rich areas, they are quite distant from large cities, so they are distant from big opportunities, but they are also distant from government eye, and it's much harder to implement surveillance, for example, or protection if local communities, local people are not part of the solution. So I think this is a great example funded by the EU, which shows that it's an empowerment of local communities. They are proud to be part of this project because they actually work to protect their own ground, their own nature, and this is becoming, you know, their job. So I think this is really a very good and powerful mixture to show to those skeptical ones who always say that nature protection goes against the country's economic interest. Yeah. So you have to have one or the other. This is a very clear example of local jobs created. But secondly, World Economic Forum proved that most of our GDP is actually connected to biodiversity. And if we lose biodiversity, we're just unable to continue some of the economic activities.
Let's also talk about some of the challenges that is surrounding governments when deploying items on ensuring that environmental policies are better managed.
So first of all, you have to have, you know, legislation which will allow effective implementation, which would be implementable. You can have, you know, the best goals, the most beautifully looking goals, but if they are impossible to implement on the ground, that's not going to work. So one thing is, of course, everything what you do, your policies, they have to be implementable on the ground. Very important, ensuring that implementation is actually taking place. So the responsible institutions, they have to step up and play the role. So I think that's key. But all the your priorities always have to have funding as well next to it. So I always say, when someone says that this is my priority, I always say, show me your budget line, and I'll tell you if it's your priority. So of course, budget is also important in ensuring that one or the other goal is implementable. And last but not least, you know, with policy it's always difficult, but if it's possible to have it measurable, then you usually know where you are. So, you know, that's why when I speak about global biodiversity framework, I don't want to speak about something very vague. I really want us at the end of the year in December in Montreal to reach an agreement where we would have basically measurable goals. Even so, that it will require lots of policy to be implemented, but in the end of the day, if it's measurable, it's easier for civil society to track, to NGOs, to people, but also to politicians to know where they are.
Let's talk about carbon border tax adjustment.
So this is absolutely part of the solution, because in the EU we have a climate law. Climate law which says that by 2030 we want to decrease our CO2 emissions by 55%, and then to reach net zero by 2050. So if we do it on our own, but our companies will decide that, look, there are other better regions where we can produce and no one cares about CO2 emissions, that will create a carbon leakage. And maybe on paper we will look good, but globally, which is climate issue, is a global issue, we won't be able to solve anything. So of course we have to ensure that there is no carbon leakage, and that this is a matter of a, you know, global scale. Most of the countries are the parties of the Paris Agreement. And these, you know, the cutting of the emission is under the Paris Agreement.
And perhaps talk to us into some of the stakeholders that are involved outside of the government institutions. Do we need to rally amongst all the other actors, including NGOs, non-governmental bodies. We're talking about other entities in the environment, and perhaps some education sector as well. How do we galvanize all these stakeholders to actually work together as a single unit to achieve these kind of objectives?
Yes, so NGOs, they're playing a very crucial role as regards sort of a watchdogs. They also usually very often become part of our projects, for example, of nature protection or nature restoration. They have required knowledge, so they're playing a very crucial role. But businesses, they can play even bigger role. Because at the end of the day, you know, if we want really to implement the Green Deal, if we want to implement climate or environmental policies, to adopt them in national parliaments is not enough. They also have to be adopted in the boardrooms. They also have to be taken into a strategies of the companies. And that will make then a huge impact. And more companies, as I said, implementing these sustainability standards, they really want to show that, for example, they do not use in their production products that are associated with deforestation. They want to clean their supply chains decrease the emissions. So I think it's becoming more and more global trend. Here, of course, politicians need to act and facilitate this change so that it would happen faster. Because you very often find yourself, you know, having a business and maybe investing into a greening your business, into sustainability, higher standards. But that means costs for your business. And you see your competitor is doing nothing, only putting fake label of calling it eco-friendly or whatever. And your sales are the same. So at some point you will say, oh, I have to drop it because it's just too expensive. So of course, politicians have to act here and facilitate facilitate sort of equal level playing field so that companies would be motivated to achieve those sustainability standards, so that sustainability would give you a competitive advantage.
All right. We'll go for one short break before we continue on our conversation with His Excellency Virginijus Sinkevičius, the EU Commissioner on the Environment. Thanks for staying on with us. We continue on our conversation with the EU Commissioner on Environment, His Excellency Virginijus Sinkevičius. Mr. Commissioner, let's talk a little bit more about some of the items that we discussed earlier.
We have 27 member states who are on the way of this transition in completely different, they find themselves in completely different stages of preparedness for this change. But at the end of the day, we all agree with the same goal, which is a net zero emissions by 2050. An intermediate goal is decrease by 55%. And I think this is fair because what it means, for example, for Malaysia, 55% from your emissions and 55% from our emissions might be a big difference, but it's 55% from our emissions. So that's an equal cut of percentage, but not an equal cut if you look at what is the difference between emissions. So I think this is the most important, that we agree to the same goals that we want to reach, and that of course those goals on their way in the planning and transition would take into account differences, because of course we have to take into account social aspect. We have to take into account parts of the world that are heavily dependent, for example, on coal, and for them to make a giant leap straight away to renewables is not going to be possible that easily. So technology transfer also has to be in place, and we have to help, let's say, those regions to make that leap at least as fast as possible if we want them to be on board. So as I said, idea can be great, so we want here to avoid carbon leakage, but then the question is implementation, because very often there are clever businesses who will try to circumvent it and find solutions.
Because they don't get punished if they do, see? That's the thing. You can put a fake label and no reprimand on that, so...
We are working on it. Within the EU, we are working on it, and already this year, by the end of the year, we will propose the Green Claims Initiative, which will ban most of those labels and will leave only certified labels, where in order to have the label, you will have to comply with certification. So, but you wanted me a short, simple answer. So I always tell you that it's implementation, especially when you consist of 27 different member states with different capacities of implementation, different types of even businesses. You know, being strong in one country and weak in the other. For example, when we implemented single-use plastic ban. The biggest issue was in the countries who are producers of single plastic and exporters around Europe and so on. Not in those who, for example, would be having and importing or buying a lot of single-use plastic, because they very quickly found with what to replace. But those who are producing this kind of products, for them it was difficult to find what they can produce, to how to deal with the employment of people and etc. So this then becomes a completely different set of questions which you need to solve.
Right, thank you very much. That was our conversation with His Excellency Virginijus Sinkevičius, the EU Commissioner for Environment. If you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to Astro Awani and look for items such as this, and perhaps continue to stay on with us on our sister shows, including that of Niaga Awani, as well as my own show, Notepad, with me, Ibrahim Sani. Till then, thanks very much for watching, and goodbye.